I'm Ross Reynolds. This is The Conversation on KUOW. Mel Sheldon is chairman of the board of the Tulalip tribe, but he wasn't always in politics. Chairman Sheldon fished for 25 years. He worked as a houseboy at two University of Washington sororities. And before that, Sheldon served as a pilot in Vietnam. Chairman Sheldon says he likes life on the edge, he likes being busy, and he likes working hard. Today, meet Chairman Mel Sheldon to find out how he got to where he is today. Mel Sheldon, thank you so much for coming down. We really appreciate you taking some time out from your day to be with us.
Well, thank you very much, and it truly is an honor to be here with you today, Ross.
Did you, as a young man, as a boy, aspire to be chairman of the Tulalip tribe? Is this something you've always wanted to do?
Well, no, that was really not on the radar back then. I was thinking back the other day. In third grade, I was reading some books about Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, and I wanted to be a New York Yankee. I wanted to wear the pinstripes.
Now, I read that you grew up on the reservation until you were five, and you left after your parents split up after that.
That's right.
Did you always feel strongly associated with the tribe as a young person?
Yes, sir. Mom made darn sure that we understood that we were Native American. We were Tulalip, as well as Sisseton Wahpeton Sioux Indian. And she made sure that we came down to Tulalip to visit our family and relatives as much as she could.
What parts of the culture did she kind of impress upon you to make sure that you still felt part of it? I mean, she took you there, but what else?
I think it was stressing family.
Yeah.
Family, the family values, that these are your cousins, this is where you belong. And it stayed with me through the years. And whether I knew it or not, someday I was going to find my way back to the reservation.
Now, you went to Vietnam right out of high school and served in the service, and you were a pilot. What kind of a pilot? What were you flying?
Well, I flew a Hughes 500. It was a reconnaissance helicopter, and I flew with the 1st Cav, 1st and 9th. And the missions I flew were, we called them hunter-killer missions. So I would go out with a Cobra, a gunship. We'd go out to an area. Then I would drop out of altitude down to the deck, and I would fly at treetop level looking for any kind of data, intelligence, trails, hooches, anything to report back to company headquarters. As it went on, we actually carried the fight right down there.
You were a teenager at that time?
19 years old.
19. Wow. You must have been one of the youngest pilots doing that?
I think 19 was an earlier age to arrive doing that. Most of the average age of pilots, as I learned later, was about 23 years old. So.
Now, a lot of soldiers had a tough time returning from Vietnam, and I guess you're no exception.
Right.
What happened when you returned?
Well, there was obviously some challenges. I didn't quite know what to do with the experience I had just had. And, I turned to education as one solution, trying to find out why we have a foreign policy that has wars like that. And also to find out about Native American history, things like that, that education served me well on going to junior college and then eventually to the University of Washington.
Yeah, and you studied political science. You went to Skagit College and later the UW. At that time, there was the nation was in a furor over the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
As a veteran going to the UW campus at the time, where there was obviously a lot of opposition, did you ever feel that?
It was tough. I wanted to feel so proud of serving our country. But it wasn't there for whatever reason. Our country was divided. And I wanted to feel so proud of it. So I had to take those feelings and put them on the side and continue life and move forward. It was through the help of family and friends and other Vietnam veterans that I could keep moving forward. Although, I'll tell you, the experience was, I will always cherish my time in Vietnam. As I tell a lot of people, it was a lot of fun when I wasn't scared.
Do you still keep up with people you served with?
Yes. Through the internet, my unit has a website. Mm-hmm. And so all of us that served with the Charlie Troop 1st and 9th, we keep track from 66 on until we went home in 71. My unit went home. I went to other unit and flew. But we keep track of each other. The brotherhood is still there today.
Mel Sheldon is my guest. He's chairman of the board of the Tulalip tribe. You came back and you used your GI benefits to go to college and learn about management and learn about political science. But while you were at the university, I understand you had kind of an unusual job. You were working at a sorority?
Yes, sir. It was a tough job. Somebody had to do it. But I had the GI Bill to work with and tuition. And so, yes, getting 3 squares a day and a little bit of a check at the end of the month was it was just right. And, you know, working, I got to see the Greek system from a different point of view. And some of the friendships I made at working at the Kappa Kappa Gamma House still holds today. I'm in contact with them, and it's such an honor to have worked there.
Were all the other guys jealous that you were working at this sorority?
Well, they wondered what it was like, and I had a lot of fun through the years sharing the stories of going up to the third floor and changing a light bulb, mm-hmm. and every morning looking at 80 young ladies coming for breakfast in their hair and curlers and things of that nature. But it was a great experience.
You began your professional life working for a telephone company. You were kind of working your way up in the management, and then you ditched all that to go fishing. How did you come to that decision?
Well, I started out fishing in 73. My mother had moved to Ketchikan, and so she got me a job there. And I worked on a purse seiner for 3 or 4 years, and then went back to finish my degree at the UW. And my uncle came to me one day. I was working for General Telephone as a telephone operator. And he says, "Nephew, I've got a job for you." And I knew that a purse seiner in the right hands could make a lot of money as a deckhand. So I said, I put the corporate career on hold, so to speak, and went fishing. And doggone if I didn't stay there for a few years.
Well, a lot of attraction to fishing because you probably didn't need to work all year round. You could make your money in part of the year and take the rest of the year off. I know a lot of fishermen did that.
Exactly. And working, you know, that was augmenting the later years when I went to further schooling, going fishing and then going to school. It was a great 1-2 combination.
Of course, fishing has been a huge tradition in the Native American community. And back in 74, there was this giant decision that affected tribes here in Washington State, the Bolt decision. And it said that the 1850s treaties that the government had signed with these tribes proved that the Native Americans were entitled to half the salmon and steelhead harvest in their traditional fishing grounds. And this was hugely controversial. Slade Gorton, who later became senator, fought it as attorney general. And I'm wondering how that affected your tribe, the Tulalip tribe. Did you have a lot of usual and accustomed places that now people could fish from and actually make a living at it?
Absolutely. It was one of the great decisions that helped all of the tribes here in the Northwest that have fishing rights in the saltwater. And what it did is it brought identity, further identity to who we are, that now we could go out and fish. Now, the challenge there was, is did we give away 50% of the fish? Should we have gotten 100%? But that's left for a different day and a different conversation. Mm-hmm. But as we moved forward from 74 on, yes, it was a big battle. Slade was just never really bought into it, that we have treaty rights that guaranteed fishing rights and the opportunity for a generation to go out and have an occupation, a viable occupation, and to feed their families and to be proud of our culture and who we are, as well as our treaty rights were upheld. We were very proud of that.
You know, I think a lot, there may still be people who resent that. There are some people, store owners near reservations, who resent the fact that you're able to go there and not have to pay the same kind of taxes on a reservation, mm-hmm. Resent the fact that the rules are different. And I think there's kind of a fundamental misunderstanding about this being special privileges versus the fact that the Native American tribes are sovereign. And maybe you could just explain that. What does that mean?
Well, the sovereignty part is guaranteed through treaties and upheld by different court decisions that we are a government. We are an actual government. And whether it be talking to the city of Marysville or to Snohomish County, or just the other day I was speaking with the Governor Jay Inslee, and we both acknowledge that we are government sitting at a peer level, government to government conversations. And Booth Gardner, memorial for him the other day as he passed on, continued his journey. He was the first governor that started our centennial accords with the tribes, acknowledging us at that state level. And we would come together and meet with them. And the President Obama and other preceding presidents do meet once a year with the tribal leaders across the nation back in D.C. So that acknowledgement of a treaty sovereignty, of who we are as a legal government, is so important.
You know, the other giant thing along with the Bolt decision, which has really affected tribes throughout the country, are the Native America casinos. And you have a casino at the Tulalip tribe. How has that changed the tribe?
Well, you're right. We do have a little bed and breakfast along I-5 there up just north of Mary.
You're being modest.
Putting a little plug in for our Tulalip Resort casino there. What it has done is, as fishing has receded, and we will always be fisher people. That's a given. That's our culture. That's our history. But now you have another occupation, an enterprise, goodwill that came our way to employ people, to provide livable wages for not only that individual, but their family, too, to be there. It has so many benefits that came our way, and we're very, very fortunate.
Any downside of casinos on your reservation? And some people associate gambling with other bad side effects. Have you noticed any?
No. As a matter of fact, early on in the compact, there was a community impact, a 2% kind of that came from table games that we would donate to the negative impact experienced by cities or counties or whoever. There was no negative impacts. It was all a positive impact. And so the tribe, in their own way, continued to give that 2% out as a goodwill gesture. So it has been a real positive impact. Today, Tulalip employs close to 3,500 direct employment, and 80% of that is non-tribal. So we are doing our best to be in this economic canoe with our larger community.
Mel Sheldon is with us. He's chairman of the Tulalip Tribe. And, you know, another thing that I just remembered from talking with you in the green room a few moments ago is that with this great recession, a lot of local governments had to pull back their funding. And there was some difficulty in funding, I think, the prosecutor's office or the courts in your county. And your tribe actually put some money into the kitty to help those with those services, didn't you?
Absolutely. You know, we have a great collaborative relationship with the prosecutor, with the sheriff, John Lovick, the work that him and his association does, the Washington State Patrol, other such entities. And through our charitable donations program, we're able to help out the different agencies. Today, as since 1992, I believe we've given over $40 million out to help different agencies and groups that benefit our larger community.
And you didn't have to. You just did that.
That part, absolutely.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Now, this brings up a kind of another interesting thing about Native American sovereignty, and that's the fact that you have your own court system. Is mm-hmm. that right? Could you just explain that a little bit? Why do you think it's important for Native Americans to have their own court system?
Well, I think it is another expression of sovereignty, a community that we have our own police force or department. We have our own judicial system. Many cities, counties are measured by those two departments or those approaches. At Tulalip, what really is special about our court system is, as you may know, the recent legislation, the VAWA, that the president signed, the Violence Against Women Act, having a legitimate court system is a very important part of the legislation. So when a crime of violence is committed against a Native woman by a non-tribal, they can be held accountable in our judicial system.
And up until now, they were not.
They were not.
How about someone else committing another crime on the reservation? Are they prosecuted in a tribal court, or are they sent to a county court?
Well, previously, they could go, it would go, depending on the crime, go to a county court or elsewhere. But we are trying to improve, and we are improving our court efficiencies, and that it is a level playing field so that anybody can come in and they will receive a fair hearing. They may not believe it, but they will. And that's expressed also when we do business with other companies. They want to go to state court for a remedy. And we're saying, no, you can come to tribal court and still get the same, you know, we're going to It's just because it's a tribal court doesn't mean that they're always going to rule for the tribe. If you have a legitimate concern, you're going to get your ruling, too.
Why do you think it's important for the tribal courts to handle cases of violence perpetrated against women when it's a non-tribal person? Were those cases taking place, and was there not the proper prosecution going on in courts outside the tribe?
Right. Well, I think if we look at the history of tribes, you know, we've always had our sovereignty, but along with it comes having a court system. And today, I think through perseverance of our elders, as well as the opportunity to fund a court system, we now are at a level that is acceptable. It wasn't always acceptable by the dominant society or whoever this tribe would have this court system. But today, it's a fact. We have them across the nation, not only at Tulalip, but other tribes, legitimate courts.
Now, Mel Sheldon, one issue that's kind of come up among some tribes is membership, because membership conveys some benefits that non-members don't necessarily have. About 300 members of the Nooksack tribe were disenrolled recently, and some of them are suing over that. What do you think about that case? Do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I usually don't comment on other tribes' issues and would like to stay with that. But at Tulalip, our enrollment is by residents. And, you know, so it's maybe a few years back, people could be dual enrolled. So, for an example, I'm Sisseton Wahpeton Sioux and also Tulalip. Mom could have enrolled me in both tribes back then, but today
it's like dual citizenship.
Yeah, dual citizenship. But today, you can only be enrolled in one, and Tulalip is the tribe that I'm enrolled in. So we try to keep that separated.
Mm-hmm. That's a Tulalip rule.
And yes, and I believe other tribes have that too.
Yeah.
With the advent of casinos, a lot of people who had the option were maybe shopping for who had the most benefits, you know, and that goes right into the type of goodwill we receive from gaming, i.e. profits. We go plow it right back into our membership through different programs and such. An example of that is our kids who want to go to college today, 80 to 100% of their educational journey is paid for by the tribe. That's one of the benefits that we have nowadays, and we're so grateful for that.
You know, one of the issues that's affected folks in your neck of the wood is the smell coming from the Cedar Grove composting plant. I noticed that you had commented that on a few years ago. That's, of course, a lot of Seattle's food and waste is up there. There have been complaints. Is it solved yet?
No, but I believe we're working towards a solution there. You know, I just actually was speaking to some folks the other day, and they still smell the smell, but we hope to get it resolved. We want a collaborative approach to it. However, sometimes we need to push a little harder to get her done.
Mel Shelton, thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you very much, and it's just an honor to speak with you, Ross.
Mel's chairman of the board of the Tulalip tribe, and he's a Vietnam vet, a fisherman, former sorority houseboy, and perhaps future motorcycle rider. He might be doing that after he retires. This is KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.